Hello, I'm Helen Boucher, and I'm happy to be back to talk with you about how to prepare for the certification exam and longitudinal knowledge assessment of the ABIM. My disclosures are shown here. So first and foremost, as you think about preparing, it's really a great idea to go to the website. And there's three links shown here to the ABIM website that include the blueprint of the infectious disease examinations for both the full certification and the MOC. So for infectious disease certification, there's two big buckets we're going to discuss: the initial certification exam that many of you will take, and then the maintenance of certification options, which a lot of us are involved in. And for maintenance of certification, or MOC, there are two options today: the every 10-year MOC exam, and that's now going to be offered just once a year. So it'll be October 21st of 2025, and then October 15th of 2026. And the website is shown here, and they have special recommendations if you have any conflicts with ID leak. And then many of us are involved in the Longitudinal Knowledge Assessment, or LKA, and that began in 2023, and we'll talk more about that. So the certification exams are both one-day computer exams. They're all multiple-choice, single-best-answer exams. And for initial certification, you have 4 2-hour sessions. Each one has up to 60 questions. This computer screen shows you how much time is remaining for each session, and there's a little message box that pops up when you have 5 minutes left. All in, including registration, the tutorial, the instructions and breaks, it's a 10-hour day. That's a long day, so bring food. The maintenance of certification, which used to be called recertification, is also 4 2-hour sessions. It's up to 220 questions, a few less, but it lasts, again, about the 10 hours. So these are long days. Both are open book with up-to-date allowed. So the newer option, we're not really calling it new anymore because it's almost 2 years old, is the longitudinal knowledge assessment. This is a 5-year recertification rolling process where you get 30 questions emailed every 3 months, and you can answer them all at once or one a day, however you want to do it. You have 4 minutes to answer each question online. It's completely open book. And then you're provided with the correct answer and the rationale. For this option, you must answer 100 questions a year out of the 120 possible questions. And you earn credits for each correct answer. So you get 0.2 MOC credits per correct answer. And then after 5 years and at least 500 questions answered, you get a pass-fail notification. And you have to fulfill all those 500 correct answers to get your 100 MOC points. As of today, over 1,400 ID physicians are enrolled in that longitudinal knowledge assessment, and I'm enrolled in it, so I can speak from experience. There's a nice link here, too, as well, to the page on the website. So here are the dates for enrollment of the longitudinal assessment, and they're quarterly. You can see how it works in terms of when the site opens and closes. It's a good idea to start early if you're going to do the longitudinal knowledge assessment. And remember that the questions expire at the end of each quarter. And once the quarter is over, you can't go back. So here's a view of the dashboard for the longitudinal knowledge assessment. So when you log in, it'll bring you to this dashboard and it'll tell you over here on the left where you are in the cycle. So this individual is towards the beginning. They've done 60 out of 600 possible questions in the 5-year period. In the middle, the second column talks about the progress. You don't see progress until you've done enough, and enough is decided by the ABIM to tell you kind of what's happening in terms of pass-fail, but you will see how you're doing in terms of questions. So in this person, they have 30 questions remaining, and they need to do that by the end of September. It tells you in the third column about tasks you have this week. And then on the far right, it talks about your time bank. So if you want to get more time, and then if you want to skip questions below and that life happens, you can skip up to 100 questions every 5 years. So that means you could just decide you're too busy and save time in a particular period of your life. All this is spelled out on the web link shown at the bottom. So in terms of the exam, you can change your answer until all 60 questions in a section are finished. So if you're unsure, make a note and then go back and review it at the end of your session. It's really important to remember that about 20% of the questions don't count. They're being pre-tested. So that's for something that's new. whether it's a new question on an old disease or a new question on a new disease. Today, that might be something like bird flu. The timing on the standard exam, that means you have about a little less than 2 minutes per question. Unanswered questions are marked wrong, so it's always good to guess if you don't know. Very important to read the whole question. There's important information in these questions. If a question seems unclear or there might be two correct answers, you could be right, and that could be a pretest question. So give it your best shot and don't get bogged down. In terms of the day, if you're doing the all-day exam, their breaks are optional, but I suggest taking them. You have three breaks during the day for a total of 100 minutes, and it's one after each of the first three test sessions. And you can use all or some of your break time, and they just subtract it when you come back from what's left over. So if you took a 10-minute break after your first session, when you come back, you'll have 90 minutes left for the day. I think it's a good idea to take the break, get up, walk around, get some food. Important to remember that there are proctors monitoring the whole space. So not just the room where the test is, but the locker rooms and the reception area. So, there's people keeping their eyes on things. In terms of the exam, you'll get a confirmation email that tells you where to go and how to get there. I think it's a good idea to check out the site, figure out where it is, where to park, where you're going to eat, just to be certain and not to have as stress on the day. Arrive at least a half an hour early. Each testing center is set up similarly. They have 8 to 25 workstations. There's an administrator who's there. They'll show you several screens at the beginning about taking the exam, and we all have to agree to a pledge of honesty. To get into the testing center, you need two types of personal identification: a government-issued ID with your photo and a signature, like a driver's license or a passport, and another form of ID that has a signature or a photo. That could be like your social security card, a credit card. You're not allowed to take the exam with expired IDs, and you will have to do palm vein scanning. You'll be wanded by security. They'll take your picture and have you sign things on the day. When you arrive and you sit down, there's a short orientation that orients you to the computer workstation. You can ask for a left-handed mouse if you need it. They can help you if you need to change the brightness or the height of your computer. They give you notepads, and there's a little note section that pops up on each question. You can request headphones and earplugs, so you can't bring your own. And if you have a problem, raise your hand, but don't get up. And they will require you to fingerprint in and out each time, so you need to allow a few minutes for that when you get up and come back in and out of the room. So for disabled test takers, the ABIM does comply with the Americans with Disability Act. They'll make modifications, and those need to be requested individually ahead of time. And there's a form for accommodation on the ABIM website. So what's not allowed in the test center? Any electronic devices, pagers, phones, et cetera, calculators. Your watch is not allowed. Your wallet or purse is not allowed. A briefcase, a jacket. You can bring a light sweater. You can't bring your own notebooks. Medications have to be prior approved, and no food and drink. There's a locker where you can keep your food for breaks, and you should bring lunch, but remember, they don't usually have refrigeration. So questions about exam day, you can either email the address shown here or call the ABIM during regular business hours, Monday through Friday. So how about the exam tutorial? It's a pretty good tutorial on the website. The link is here, and it shows examples of the questions and what the format looks like. I really encourage you to take a few minutes to do this. It makes it a lot easier on the day of the exam. So as we mentioned before, these exams are multiple choice questions that have a single best answer. Usually they're describing a scenario in patient care. They ask about the work that's done, what kind of tests are required, and often for us in infectious disease, about making a diagnosis. Sometimes they're about ordering and interpreting test results, like what would be the next best test, recommending treatment. Sometimes it's about assessing risk or determining prognosis, a little bit about epidemiology, and also some about underlying pathophysiology and basic science knowledge, although I'll share there's less and less basic science as the years go by. Over 75% of the questions are case presentations. And they're not trying to trick you, but there are often is a lot of detail embedded. So reading the cases carefully is important. Normal lab values are provided. Pediatric questions are less and less likely. And as I mentioned, there's less and less basic science on these exams. So there'll be less about mechanisms of resistance per se. Sometimes it'll be included as a clue. And that's the same can be said about microbiology. So sometimes it'll be an example, like what could you do to help the lab? Like using oil on media for lipophilic yeast or iron in 30 degree incubation for Mycoplasma haemophilum. So the content of these exams is determined by a pre-established blueprint. And the blueprint is slightly different for initial certification and maintenance of certification. The idea being that at initial certification, your fund of knowledge should be deeper in more areas than at maintenance of certification time. And so maintenance of certification, more of the blueprint is focused on more common problems encountered in infectious diseases like Staph aureus bloodstream infection, for example. So here's a look at some of the content and categories. This is from the 2019 blueprint, which is still the active blueprint. And you can see a couple of important messages here, right? Over a quarter of the exam is on bacterial diseases. That's a big chunk, which is kind of as it should be. The next most frequent is general internal medicine, critical care, and surgery. And that's a little misleading because that's a lot of stuff, but it sort of gives you a flavor. Then comes HIV. So it gives you a flavor of sort of the focus and the intensity of the questions. Now, sometimes it's hard to tell what a question is referring to in the blueprint, right? If you got a question about ventilator-associated pneumonia, it could be a bacterial disease question, an antimicrobial question, or a critical care question. And so the blueprint accounts for that and tries to ensure that you don't end up with an imbalance. The other thing I'll point out is that things like infection control, which some people do 100% of their job and some do zero, is only 5% of the exam. So you can tell from this blueprint areas where you need to really make sure you study and areas where you might even be able to skip studying depending on your area of specialty. So clinical syndromes, very important. There's a list shown here. These are all things that are common in infectious diseases like infections in HIV and cardiovascular infections, liver and biliary tract infections, skin and soft tissue infections, and bone and joint infections, for example. Continuing clinical syndromes include things like healthcare-associated infections, sexually transmitted infections, and fever. No real surprises here. Then we focused on patient populations like immunocompromised people, persons following solid organ transplant or bone marrow transplant, pregnant women, and travelers. So I would suggest you take some time to go to the website and look at the lists because it gets very granular and that could be helpful for your studying. So this is just one example. As you dig down into the blueprint under the bacteria, you can look at rickettsia and see that 2.5% of questions are about rickettsia. And you can see that of that, all of these rickettsia could be included. So you can decide in your studying how much or how little you want to focus on these areas. So another important thing to remember about this exam is that it takes several years, that's years, for a new question to appear on the exam and count. So what that means is that developments in the last 2 years are less likely to be on the exam and to count. So for today, that might be something like H5N1 bird flu, right? It's a hot topic, but it hasn't been hot for that long. So if you saw a question on bird flu, it might be a test question this year, just to keep in mind. There are things that were hot and aren't hot anymore, like anthrax, that you're not likely to see anymore. That's likely to drop off. The other thing that the authors really try to do is to not include so-called lookup questions, like the treatment for an uncommon parasite, right? So it's important to know something about malaria. That's a common parasite. But filariasis, I don't think you'd be asked about a treatment of filariasis. You might be asked to identify it or to think of it in your differential diagnosis. So how do people do? This is the good news, and this is why you should be reassured, right? The first time pass rate on initial certification is shown here. going back to 2011. And what you can see is that it is above 95% for the last over 5 years. And last year it was 96% in the over 400 individuals who sat for initial certification. And then MOC. So let's talk about MOC. So the blueprint for MOC is a little bit different. And this is just a little section of the blueprint. And you can see, so it shows how the blueprint addresses MOC and the knowledge check-in, which is part of MOC, right? So it weights the questions based on if they're of high importance to a currently practicing infectious disease physician in green, medium in yellow, or low in red. And if it's of low importance, there won't be any questions on the MOC test. So in this example, you can see Staph aureus in the top row is high importance, and there'll be lots of questions on that on your MOC. But if I draw your attention to the bottom of the chart, in the bottom two rows, pathophysiology and basic science of Carinobacterium and bacillus is of low importance to the practicing infectious disease physician 10 or more years into their practice. So you won't see questions on that. So this is another table on the website that's worth checking out. So how do people do on the MOC? This is showing the pass rate on the MOC exam. And what you can see is the pass rate, again, very high, not quite as high as the first time pass rate, but well into the 90s. And the last pass rate that's shown is for 2023, which was 92% in the 263 persons who took it. The 24 data was not available at the time of this talk. So what do I recommend you do between now and the exam? So being at this course is like the best thing you're doing for yourself, and I hope you enjoy it. Keep notes. Do keep yourself a little binder of the things that you want to look at closer to the exam, and start early, right? So you're doing that. Use the review questions and the images that we have on the website to help you practice and identify areas that need further study. Then I recommend taking some time to go to the ABIM website and do the tutorial, read about the exam day, get yourself comfortable, figure out where the place is, and look at the blueprint. I think that's worth time well spent. And then, you know, pull out those handouts, the little binders, a couple days before your exam and review it. That's just a good way, whether for you, for me, the weakness is in things like parasites and mimicking syndromes, right? Spend a little time on those in the days before the exam, because those will help you in the areas where you need those details reminded. And with that, I'll wish you great luck and give thanks to Jack Bennett and Bennett Lorberg, who helped develop this talk now several years ago. Thanks very much.